Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Phone call. Good evening. This is Shisada Kona Kamada. Thank you for tuning in to the Satsang with the Shambhala Center. I'm joined again tonight by Piela Yen, Vice President for the Shambhala Center. Say good evening, Piela Yen.
Good evening.
Lovely. I'm going to take just one quick second before we do our clearing to put a little plug in, since I have the mic here. As I do these programs, you hear me refer all the time to Atona Arrayas, and Atona Arrayas is my beloved guide. I would like to plug, she's someone who has been working kind of behind the scenes for 25 years and is not well known in the, she is well known in the spiritual community, but she's not well known. You can't really find her anywhere. But she has privileged us with doing some radio programs on Blog Talk Radio. And so for anyone who has an interest in Atona, she's doing wonderful, wonderful programs with a dear friend of hers named Ari concerning her own journey right now. I think she's done four programs so far, and she's giving the story of her journey when her awakening process. And then she's going to start moving into the teachings as well as we do here with Satsang. So for anyone who's interested in Atona's personal story, and I couldn't recommend it more, you can tune in. I don't know exactly. They're running on Thursday nights, actually the same time we are, but they aren't every week. So if you go to Blog Talk Radio and you look for the program called Shattering the Matrix, if you get on that program, you will find all of the programs. I think that Ari called it Walking Between Realities, I think was the name of the program. So again, she is my guide. I've been working with Atona since officially the very beginning of 2008. And just amazing story, and so worth the time to listen. And it'll give you even more understanding about the work that we're doing here, who I am, and all of that, because it's all kind of intertwined. You know, we're all interrelated. So, okay. So that being said, I guess I'm gonna ask you to get centered now, and let's go ahead and do our clearing for the night. Go ahead and take a deep breath, close your eyes, shake off any stress from the day here. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles, not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each of us. And I ask that it be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to this group tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Very good. And I also, I think, will mention, I mentioned last week, that protection that I use is on our BBS page. So if you go to bbs.com and look up the Shambhala Center, you'll find that on that page. I also have done it as a YouTube video with my voice. A lot of people requested that they could have something to actually listen to. And so we have that on our YouTube channel. So that's at YouTube and under the Shambhala Center. And you can find that there if anyone wants to have that so that they can listen on their own. Okay, so where are we going to start tonight, Pielian?
We are going to start with, now, when you first told your story 2 weeks ago, you were talking about how you were reading in a book that will rename your main, so I can hear myself.
Yes. The mystery book, yes.
Yes, the mystery book. And you talked about The Fool.
Yes.
And how you were reading about that, and then, you know, everything came together for you. So can you talk about The Fool?
I will, and I'll tell you why, because what you're going to get from me tonight is the Cliff Notes version of The Fall. There are people who are far better versed on the ins and outs of actually what happened than I am. And actually, I'm going to make another plug right now. For those of you on BBS, you're already on BBS. There's, you know, everyone else too. I am absolutely in love with Commander Lady Athena, and she does a program on BBS on Wednesday nights called The Voice of the Ashtar Command. If my memory serves me, she did a whole program. I think it was entitled, if you go back on her archives, I think it was entitled, Did You Come Here with Sanat Kamata? I think that was the name of it, but it definitely mentions Sanat Kamata in the context of The Fall. I would highly recommend that program for anyone who can access the archives with BBS, because it really lays everything out for you so beautifully. So I'm just going to give you the kind of the quick version, because not so much for the story of it, even though it is so valid in and of itself, but because of the way it relates to why I'm doing what I'm doing here, and why, you know, those of us light bearers on the planet are here to awaken humanity. There actually is a reason for all of this. So yeah, I'll give you the quick version. In essence, your divine nature is non-polarized, okay? So if we look at what polarization means, it means that if you think of it as a magnet, you know that there's a positive and a negative. And this world functions from the space of polarization, which means that, you know, for every up, there has to be a down, and for every in, there has to be an out. And within that reality, this is how everything functions here. However, that is not the divine blueprint for consciousness. And for, you know, the being that you are, never, ever, as Athena would say, because it's beautiful, has never, ever left the heart of God. It can't. It is God. And nothing can ever separate itself from the all that is. It's just impossible. However, consciousness is having an experience here of separation. And it, in highest truth, it's not even happening at all. So we can look at it in relation to if you have a dream, and when you wake up, you notice that in very short time, the dream fades away, and then it's gone, and then it's just this faint flicker of a memory, and then maybe a day later, you can't even pull it up, and it's just gone. Well, this experience really isn't any different than that. It's an experience that appears to be happening, but at the same time, from the nature of what you are, you can't carry polarity into that. It just doesn't work like that. There's this buffer zone between the polarized worlds and the illumined worlds, and that buffer zone keeps the illumined worlds from ever being contaminated with the concept of separation. Okay, so having that piece kind of locked in now, what has happened is, you know, in the divine blueprint of the, you know, worlds upon worlds, I mean, this never-ending expansion of love that we call God, it's like every now and again on a planet, consciousness falls. And what happens in essence is that, how do I term this? It's as if consciousness has a moment where it looks at a concept And instead of allowing the concept to kind of move by like falling leaves that drift in and out, which many thoughts just do, they just come and go and nothing is paid attention to. But this one concept was actually looked at and then it was identified with. And the concept was I. So if you think of it from the perspective that in highest truth and in the illumined worlds, the essence of you is individuated, but it is never separated. And so in the illumined worlds, you know yourself to be God. You know yourself to be an aspect of the all that is, but it is individuated. But you also know that you are, it's like everything is coming out of the same source. So you are still one with everything else, seen and unseen. What happens is in the moment where consciousness identified with this concept that there could be I, right? And of course, language is interesting because language is polarized, so we can only kind of point to things with our words. But if there's an I, then by definition, there has to be a you, right? So as soon as that came into place, polarization was born. And in that moment, there are things that come into being all simultaneously, and I can get into that in a little bit. But let's just have the understanding that there was a system of worlds where humanity, or we'll call it humanity, on this particular planet had fallen, okay? It was living from this place of separation. Well, there's a divine plan for, every level of quote-unquote life in the universe. And so the planets are conscious, just as you are conscious and, highly evolved consciousness, but they are conscious and the planets are moving through their own growing and evolution, just as you are. So everything is very organized in the universe. And so there are certain amounts of time that planetary systems are allowed to, move through their experiences. And then they bump up into we would call the next octave of creation. It's deeper lessons, more experience. And what happens is if there is a planet where consciousness has fallen and it comes up to the time where it's time for the system as a whole to move or to ascend to the next level, then that one, it doesn't stop the planet herself, but let's say that the consciousness of the humanity on the planet can't make that leap, okay? And so what happens is people who are familiar with the Bible would know it as the second death. The second death is actually when Source will take all of the individuated forms of consciousness and pull it back into itself. And basically kind of, for lack of a better word, recycle it, create it new again. And then that individuated consciousness wouldn't carry any memory, so to speak, of where it's been and all of its experiences. It has to start fresh. Of course, for the individuation that would happen to, you wouldn't have any knowledge that you missed anything. So it's not like you'd feel like you missed anything. But just understand that can happen and does happen. Earth was a very unique planet in that, I'm trying to keep this short. It's such an involved story. But Earth was unique in that the Earth was very much illumined. It was existing, outside of polarity. And there was a planet within a system that was coming up to that place where it was going to go through second death. And what happened, the long and the short of it, is that the people of the planet Earth stepped forward and offered themselves to actually allow the consciousnesses of those on that planet to come in and birth through their bodies. To allow them to live out their karmic debts here and then ascend out of the fallen state of consciousness. And it hadn't been tried before. My understanding is that it had never been tried before, but they were given approval to do it. Those of you who have done very deep work with me know how subtle and all pervasive polarity consciousness is. And unfortunately for the people of the planet at the time, because they had never experienced that level of consciousness, when it came, you know, it's like this insidious thing that starts moving, that if you can just witness it as energy, that's fine. But the thing is, when you're constantly being bombarded, and those of you who are sensitive to energy, you will completely understand this. This is like if you, say, walked, say you came from meditation, right? And you were feeling really amazing and your chakras are all open and everything's great. And you walk into a bar at midnight on a Saturday night, you know the feeling of the energy that just, it hits you so hard, it literally will drain the energy right out of you. Okay, so you're looking at a collective of humanity that went through that experience. Okay, and there's a whole lot to it, and I don't need to get into it, but basically that's what happened. So in the moment when an energy comes, now mind you, it's all just energy, okay? Energy is just energy until we put a name on it, all right? So they experienced an energy they had never experienced before that didn't have a name. And what mind from the polarized mind loves to do is it loves to find a name for everything because that makes it real, right? If I can call it something, if I can look to it and say, well, that's because of that, now it's real for me. And that's part of the identification process. So all it takes is one little thing to identify with. And maybe it's just the concept that there could be me. And in that moment, this is what happens with humanity. So then, of course, you know, we came to the space on Earth where the Earth then, after, you know, millions of years, was going to go through the fall as well. And that was when Sanat Kamata stepped up and asked to be allowed to come and hold light for the planet. And of course, there's a whole story there. So the reason that I like to tell the story is because it gives you an understanding coming into this work of why we're doing this work to begin with, okay? It's a story, so in one sense, the story can act as a block to your own work, but it doesn't have to be. It can still be true, and this is, I know PLN wanted to talk about this at some point in this program, so I'll mention it right now. This is one of the infinite number of cases where my answer to something is going to be yes and no. And that's because, she's over there laughing, that's because when you do this work, what you're actually doing is you're moving, you know, you're a multidimensional being, okay? And you exist on every level simultaneously. And just because your point of awareness is seated here right now, it does not mean you aren't already existing in all the different dimensional levels. And what happens in this work is as you continue expanding consciousness, you become more and more aware of these multiple levels, and you're able to function from them within this reality. So the trick for a guide like myself is in showing you that what is true here is not necessarily true outside of this paradigm. And it's this tricky business because it seems like a paradox all the time, and it actually is. But the most important thing to remember within that is that one truth does not negate the other, okay? And this, pay attention to that. You got your notebook, now's the time to write that little piece down, because you will come into this over and over and over again in your own work. You will witness how the lower mind always needs to make a choice between one or the other. It's always one or the other, okay? And what the lower mind struggles to begin to witness is that both can be true simultaneously, and both are true simultaneously. But what the lower mind has to do in order to hold its form as, you know, what it thinks to be a separate beingness, is it has to say that, well, I hold one side, but I don't hold the other. Of course, that's impossible because you do hold both. One side's conscious, the other side's unconscious, but you are holding both. But mind convinces you that, you know, if I decide to call myself a Republican, so to speak, now I can't be a Democrat, right? And I don't hold those truths, you know, for myself. I hold these. And actually, it's all going on simultaneously. And there's a whole lot of hypocrisy that goes on that people don't witness, because this is how life is. It's quite hysterical when you start to see the hypocrisy that's functioning, and everyone's a walking hypocrite. And it's hysterical. That might trigger some people right there. And that's okay. but it is quite funny. You're like, oh my gosh, like you just witness people, like they'll be in judgment about someone and you literally can see where they do the exact same thing and it's completely hidden from them, you know, and it's just funny to watch. And then you wake up to one day and you're like, oh, look at me, the walking hypocrite, you know, and it's funny because you're not even that. So where was I? You had to remind me.
Well, we were talking about the reason why we do this work, how the fool ties into that.
Okay. So the important thing to remember here is that, like I said to you in the beginning, that the third dimensional reality, while it is, real in the sense that if you're, walking through your living room and you stub your toe, you feel it, right? And everyone's going to say, well, of course that's real. Okay, and of course it is. No one's going to deny that. But in a greater sense, it actually isn't, because it's existing in a state that is the exact opposite of what your divine nature actually is. And since there can't actually be anything opposite in highest truth, then this can't actually be happening. So sit with that for just a second, because in highest truth, this isn't even happening. All right. It is a projection of consciousness, but it is only a projection. It's an amazing, magical, wonderful projection to think that, you know, if you stop and think about it, wow, like to think that all of this is just energy. It's just light. And yet we have the experience of it as being everything that it is. I mean, look around your room. If I said to you, look around your room, and there actually isn't form to anything, it's just light, and it's your own consciousness that created the form, it's your own consciousness that's seeing it for what you think that it is. But in truth, it doesn't exist at all. Wrap yourself around that for a second, because that's worthy of your attention. And if in our time together, if you ever find that you hit a place where you feel a little queasy, that's okay. It means you're looking at truth. And mind hits a wall with that. It doesn't know what to do. And it will pull on everything that it can to bring awareness back to the body. Body is like the hardest, one of the hardest things to break through is the identification with the physical form, which is why meditation is crucial to your work. So I will say that right now. For people who are tuning in and who are interested in going deeper with the teachings, you have got to be meditating as regularly as possible and for long periods, if possible. Like a 10-minute meditation twice a day isn't quite going to cut it. Okay.
Can you explain why meditation is so crucial when doing this work?
Absolutely. Meditation is, from one very basic thing, if you take it back to like Vedanta, right? Back then they went super, super deep into meditation. They were exploring consciousness through meditation. And what they discovered was that, you know, through meditation, as consciousness actually pulls itself from the physical form, right? And those of you who have had, say, an out-of-body experience know that, you know that feeling, that you actually aren't the body. But there are very few people on the planet who have had the experience of knowing that they're not the body, knowing that their awareness can transcend, you know, the feeling that you're actually in a body. And of course, you're not in this body. It's ridiculous. But we're convinced we are. And through meditation, this is what happens. You know, one's point of focus becomes so single-pointed that everything kind of stops, and it enables consciousness to kind of release the trappings of the form. And it enables it to move into the expansion that exists. This is actually when you're identified in body consciousness, it's very contracted, whereas outside of it, it's very expansive. And that's like one of the key reasons that you've got to be meditating, is because in order to transcend this reality, you're never going to do it if you truly think that body is you. Okay, it just can't happen. So that's really crucial. And the other beautiful thing about meditation is that when you have done very deep work, especially if you're doing a processing work that goes extremely deep, you come into understandings. And there are times where as a guide, I would specifically tell someone, like, right now, kind of, you've just seen something, and you can tell when this, you know, happens for a person. You've just seen something, and there's this reaction that occurs with the person. And it's like, you just say to them, now go into meditation. You just go into meditation and stay there as long as you can hold it. And what that enables is, when you see things, a certain amount of dissolution of the identification of the personal self happens. Okay. When you start to witness that you aren't your thoughts, I mean, that's a big deal, right? Because right now you think that you're the thinker, and that's actually not the case. And you think that you're the doer, and that's not the case either. And when you come into, through your own work, using your life experience, okay, when you're using your own life, you're not taking things that I'm saying to you and trying to, you know, internalize them and make them yours. No, no, no. You're taking your life, and you're taking an experience that happened, and then you're being guided into how to look deeper into what's actually going on there with the lower mind. And you come into these understandings that, you know, they'll just knock your socks off. They're incredible. And the beautiful thing is that when you bring that into meditation, it allows for those understandings to really lock in to place. And that way, when you come out and you re-engage in the world and that personal self reforms, it actually reforms from a different place. Okay. So when you have these experiences, if you have the experience and it happens and you jump right back into your regular world, right? And your all the roles that you play, then it can't truly lock in. And so you'll find that you had the experience, but then you lose it. And then maybe you can't even see it anymore. Whereas if you take that into meditation, it gives it a chance to really anchor in, and just even like go to sleep. I mean, going to sleep is one of the best things you can do after really big experiences like that, because consciousness, you know, goes quote unquote home, so to speak, and it has that chance to just be there. And then it just does its thing. So, you know, that's probably the best way to say it. And then when you reform, you're reforming from a different place. And it's this evolution that is taking place. But yeah, that's why meditation is crucial, especially in the beginning. Really, really crucial.
Okay. Now, you actually mentioned while you were just talking about that, about thinking that we're the thinker, that we're the doer. I know that's a huge one for a lot of your students when you say, who's doing anything? And we're like, but I was driving the car, you know, and it's understanding that. Can you explain that some more?
Oh, let's see. Now, bear with me, because there are going to be times where I'm going to get an internal check that's going to go, it's too early for that. So just bear with me. Okay. And here's my challenge for those of you out there listening, especially if you're new. I know a lot of my students are listening, and this is not anything new for them. But for new people, if I say certain things, it might send you completely over the edge very quickly, very quickly. I don't want to completely lose people yet. Yet the time will come. Okay. Let me just see. Well, okay. It's not time for you're not the doer. Okay. It's just not time, but let's look at the concept of being the thinker, because that is a beautiful thing to bring up. I want you to envision for a moment, Mariah said to you, everything is energy. So envision that something you call anger is an energetic form, okay? A thought form, but not even really a thought form until it has a word that makes it a thought. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's an energetic. But if I ask you to think about what anger means to you, and if I said, I want you to close your eyes and sit with it, look at it. Where is it in your body? What is it? You could locate it, right? If I said, I want you to think about something that made you angry today, and you did it, and you were capable of moving yourself, moving your awareness into that, being that making that that's present now. That didn't happen 2 hours ago. It's actually arising now. So it is now. So find the energy and let's look at it. You would actually be able to kind of wrap yourself around that, right? Well, all thought exists. Okay. Again, we're in this polarized reality where everything exists in balance. Okay. In balance. So all that means all thought exists simultaneously. All right. And thought is like, I always use the concept of a radio station for this because it's perfect. If you have, if you're old enough to remember like I am, you know, having like an AM radio that had a dial on it when we were kids, and you'd turn the dial and you'd hear all the static until you tuned into a station and then you got a clear signal, you would notice that, you know, the signal here sounded different from the signal a little further up because they were different stations. Okay. So you can think of your consciousness as one of those stations. All right. And that station is attuned to a specific frequency. And so all thought exists simultaneously in this, you know, you can't give it a location or whatever, but it exists simultaneously in this reality that we're experiencing. It's like running through you. Think of it like radio waves that run through your body and you don't even witness it, right? And you are the tuner. So you've got your antenna out and your antenna is looking for certain things. So based on the matrix that your consciousness is carrying in this identified state, it will actually pick up certain thoughts and tune into them, whereas other thoughts will go right by and you'll never witness them. Okay. So perfect example, you can look at, say, two children who are raised in the same home with the same parents. Everything about their life is very, very, very similar. Yet you'll have one child who frequently thinks, you know, I'm special, you know, I am fun and I am, you know, worthy and I am loved, all that. And then you could have the other child say, you know, I can't do anything right. Nobody loves me, you know, that kind of thing. What makes the difference? Well, one consciousness is programmed to tune into a certain station and the other consciousness is programmed to tune into a different station. And so that's where everybody is functioning from. The thoughts themselves are not unique to you. They are not. Thought is it's an energetic that has had labels attached to it. It's part of, they're a part of huge matrices of, you know, geez, I don't know how to explain this because it's kind of huge. You know, anger can be placed in multiple roles, multiple, you see what I'm saying? So it's like everything is this huge, remember those rubber band tennis balls? You just keep wrapping them, they get bigger and bigger, and this is one huge conglomeration of lines running all over. Well, that's what's happening here, right? And you are tuned in to certain things. So what happens is through the level of work that we do, what you start to witness is that, you know, your consciousness itself is, you're actually, you know, you're fully aware of all of it, but only part of it is running through the part that's conscious of it, right? The rest is unconscious. And you start to become aware of the things that are running in your life that are unconscious. And that's where, you know, these amazing experiences come from, because they're completely transformational when you see that there's a whole other level of you that's functioning and that is actually creating your outside world. You know, remember what I said last week, that what you can't own is yourself. You project into the outside world and you experience it out there, right? Well, when you start to witness what's happening at an unconscious level of the lower mind, which you get in through the processing work that I refer to all the time, because you're able to slow the mind down and see what's actually occurring, then these things start to come to light and you start to see what's really going on underneath the surface. Like, you have a whole concept of who you are, but it's only half of the picture. Okay. If even half, there's so much more going on. So, yeah. Okay. What else?
Last week you mentioned karma.
Dun, dun, dun.
And every time that word comes up, everyone always says, "What is karma?"
Oh, I love this question. Okay. I'm gonna do my best with this. Again, there are so many people out there who are so better versed in this than I am, and I'm gonna tell you I only teach from my own understanding. I can't teach you from someone else's. So I'll give you what I came into as my experience of what karma is. Okay, how does that sound? Okay. again, we're sitting in this polarized reality. Now, if you picture a set of those justice scales, right? And if you look at this reality is the justice scale that has to be in balance, what you'll see is that as soon as, and we're going to hold one side as, say, the positive side and one is the negative side, as soon as you put something that's a little too much on one side, it tips it out of balance, okay? That can't happen here because this world has to be maintained in balance. So this is the, you know, where I love to call the, well, David Icke said it once, and I just thought it was brilliant. He said that the New Age is like the last cul-de-sac on the road to enlightenment, which I thought was brilliant because it's true, because we get very trapped in people who get trapped in the concept that everything has to be love and light and the rest of it we're just going to push away and not acknowledge. And in this reality, that's a joke, because as soon as we hold one, the other has to manifest, right? Okay. So just as a positive note, right, when you, especially for where we're living today, when you look in the outside world and you see how chaotic everything has become and is becoming and it's ramping up and it literally is to the point now, and I'm sure many of you will agree with me, where it's starting to feel surreal. You know, life used to feel kind of real and now it's so crazy that you're like, it can't even be real. I mean, it's like a TV show, you know. It's like a bad TV show. So the good news is that when you're seeing that happening on the outside, it means that the same is happening as far as the light quotient, which is kind of more of an internal thing that's happening with consciousness, right? It means it is ramping up. Everything is ramping up. So take heart, because, you know, we're doing exactly what we all came here to do, and it is working, and, you know, we're already God victorious. We already won the race. You know, we came back in time to re-experience this, but it's done, so we don't kind of have any concern there. But karma is here to hold everything in balance. So if we want to look at the whole concept that you right now are identified as a multitude of different things. Okay, so think of all the different roles or valences that you carry, right? So if we look at, we're going to look at PLEM because she's sitting here in front of me. So if we look at her, you know, she is what? A human, okay? She is a woman. She is a mother. She is a daughter. She is a friend. She is an employee. She is a, what's that? A sister. And on and on. And you all can agree you have the same things, right? Well, the thing is, as soon as we label ourselves with anything and we identify ourselves as anything, what did I say before? The opposite holds true for us as well, but we don't own it because we have already convinced ourselves that we are this. Karma's there to bring you back to balance, okay? People have this concept that karma is only like a bad thing, and we have to look at it a little differently. It's not just if you do something bad's going to happen to you. That's not the whole point. The point, again, is to hold everything in balance and ultimately to bring you to the understanding where you can first see yourself as both, and then ultimately to see that you're neither. And then to walk that beautiful middle path of the Buddha, right? And the middle path only seems to, at least in my experience, happen when you can first own both sides. All right. It's like if you skip one, the next part can't kind of really come into being, because until it's uprooted and you see through it, that's when it allows you to dissolve it out. Okay. So karma functions that way. So let's say you come to the end of your physical lifetime and you are a white male who is racist and a misogynist, let's say. We'll use something extreme here. It very well could be that you will end up returning as a woman of color, right? Because the point is that you've experienced this one side where you identified with this and you judged that. So now we're going to give you an opportunity to live the side that you judged so that you can see that the judgment wasn't accurate, first of all, and wasn't inclusive, that it caused separation versus unity. And that's the point of karma. Now, the downside is that when one comes back in another body, they don't remember the lifetime before. So it's kind of set up to be this ongoing cycle of reincarnation over and over and over and over. But the beautiful thing is that, you know, the answer is in the program. And that's something that, you know, Pielian and I were just talking about this before. I was looking back on some of my notes today from when I first started my work. And I had come very early on to an understanding that I wrote it out as, if there is a devil, it is the mind. And I looked back at it today and I was laughing about it because it still holds true, you know, that the only place that there could be a devil would be in polarity consciousness anyway. And within the lower mind, for people who start doing this work, they see that it's like the lower mind is functioning as this trap, and it is, but it's not. Okay, here's your paradox. Here's your yes and no, because here it is. Is it a trap? Well, sure. But at the same time, every single little thing you need to walk out is staring you in the face every step of the way. Okay, the thing you see as a trap is actually, you know, the birdcage with the door wide open, but you're the bird in it who hasn't seen the door yet, right? And that's what's going on here. So karma, you know, it's not a negative thing. It's not like it's here to trap you. It's here to do the opposite. It's here to show you what you have forgotten, right? You're not here to learn anything. You're here to remember, right? You have to think of it. Everyone thinks of this in reverse. You listen to this program because you think you're going to learn something. No, no, no. You're here to throw off the stuff that you've taken on that isn't serving your memory and your remembrance of what you are. Okay. So while it seems like you're learning things along the way, you actually aren't. You're just coming into your own knowing. Okay. Capital K. It's a big word. Use it all the time. It's important. You do come into your own knowing. And so, yeah, so that's how karma, and just to go back to a statement I made earlier, that when consciousness fell, karma and reincarnation and physical densification and the lower mind itself, okay, those four lower bodies and the states of mind that go with it all came into form simultaneously. So this whole dream of a reality popped into being simultaneously, boom. And people will experience that in, there's a particular meditation we do called the Primal Imprint Meditation. And in that, you actually see how the states of mind all came in an order, a very specific order, and what happened there. And that's the story that is perpetuating itself. The lower mind is singular. Okay. That's another thing that it'll stop you in your tracks when you actually really hear me. The lower mind, remember I say the thoughts aren't yours. Okay. They belong to the lower mind, and it's singular. It's singular. So for thoughts to be yours is impossible, from the sense that if you think you're an individuated, separate entity, you are not having your own thoughts. It's impossible. The lower mind is singular. And there is one story that is playing itself out over and over and over. Okay, it's kind of like, I love to use computer technology when possible because it's perfect for this. It's like if you were a computer programmer and you create a program, and the program is created in such a way that it loops back around on itself. And so once it starts running, you can walk away from it and you never have to look at it again because it's just going to run, you know, for eternity. That's what we're looking at. That is patterned consciousness. Okay, and that is consciousness that is identified with the separate self. It is a program. It is a program that runs. It started with the concept that there could be an I. And this whole program is running. And, you know, it's kind of like a spiraling, circular-looking thing, if you could actually see it energetically. But this program is running. And so what literally is happening is that subconsciously, you are seeking out the things in the world that are going to trigger whatever it is that needs to be triggered for you so that you can experience this pattern over and over and over. And the thing is, it's hidden from you because you think that the person you're having the experience with is separate from you. Do you understand that?
Yes, I do.
Excuse me. Good. So, because you think that that person out there is separate, and then that person is separate from another person, it keeps the whole program hidden from you. Because what you see is that where you are in your, let's, so look at it as if it's a circle. Okay. And let's say right now in your experience, you're sitting at 12 o'clock, you're on a clock, you're at 12 o'clock. And then maybe your spouse is sitting at 4 o'clock. You can't see that your spouse is you because he appears to be happening in a, having a different experience. Actually, it's not happening at all. You're all having the same exact experience. It's just you're at different points on that wheel, right? And that's what makes it appear as if it's all different. There's nothing different going on. And I hate to say it, and I'm going to burst your bubble today, but there's nothing unique about you as this separated self. Okay? Your story is every man's story. There's only one story. And it has a different form, and it has a different name, and the form and the name changes all the time, but it's the same story. And that's the beautiful thing about processing work that the next program will get into, you know, exactly what it is and how we begin to do that level of work. But the beautiful thing about processing work is you're capable it's kind of, think about the observer is a piece of that lower mind that's capable of becoming stronger. And it's like a reporter, you know, who's just there to observe what's happening and report very, it has no opinion of its own. So it can report on what's actually happening. Whereas the personal self has an opinion about everything and is convinced that its opinion is accurate and will fight to the death to hold on to that opinion. Everybody knows that person. Guess what? It's you too. And you're doing it in a way that you aren't even aware of, most likely. But the observer is capable of looking and going, oh, so that observer is able to look at the personal self without its own story and becomes capable of seeing what's really going on. And then you can slow the mind down and you can see all the states of mind that happen when you get triggered and what you do, where, you know, for instance, where does self-righteousness come in? You know, self-righteousness is this beautiful little state of mind that will create the swing that swings you out of the downward spiral and over into the upward spiral where you start to feel better, right? And there's all of this stuff that happens, and it's intricate and it's amazing. I mean, it's just amazing. So people who you know, this is like mental yoga, basically. It's the yoga of the mind. And people who are very logical and who like to say, you know, like this came first and then that, and then that, and that led to that. This is perfect work for you because this is exactly what you see. And then when you start to see it in your own life, then you move into the amazing space where you see it everywhere, which is pure magic. You know, you're out one day in a grocery store and you're like, oh my gosh, like there's the story. That was my story yesterday. You know, completely different person, completely different scenario, but you see it. The words that are coming out will have nothing to do with your story, but you see what's laying underneath it. And you're like, oh, like there it is again. There it is again. And then guess what? It becomes impersonal. And then you begin to say or to see who, like, I'm not what I thought I was, but I thought I was this and I thought I was this. And I've worked really hard to be this. And you see, you know what? I'm not any of it. Right? Yeah. Really profoundly life-changing work. No question.
You mentioned the word valance,
yeah,
a few times. Can you actually explain for everyone what a valance is?
Yeah, yeah. You could just use the word role, right? Anything an identifier. It's just a word that Atona always used, and I just picked it up. She uses the word valance, but you could think of it as a role. You know, the mother role. It is a valance. And it's kind of cool, actually, if you think about it as any of you who are, you know, like home designers or home decorators, you know what a window valance is, right? What does it do? It covers the window. Well, it's an identifier that is covering, you know, your nature. It's a veil, right? Yeah. So every time you go in and you dissolve one of those valances, okay, you dissolve out a role, which is comprised, it's a whole matrix of belief systems that comprises one role. But when you get in there deep enough and you actually see through that whole thing and it dissolves out, that's what you will hear in the spiritual community is like having the veils lifted. That's what that is. And I swear to you, it feels just like that. I've actually had the experience where I literally felt like there was a piece of cloth, like invisible cloth, that got lifted up off of my head. And it was like, I could see clearly, you know, it was amazing to have that experience. And you then you understand, oh my gosh, that's why they call it lifting of the veils, because that's exactly what it is. Yeah, yeah, it's very cool. So yes, when you hear me say valance, I'm just talking about any role that you have identified with. Yeah.
Okay. All right. How many minutes do we have left? We have about six. Do you want to... I would like to talk about the charity event that we're running.
Great idea. Okay, so, well, we should first tell everybody that the Shambhala Center for Spiritual Awareness kind of has another service arm, and we call it Create a New World. And Create a New World is... It's not directed specifically toward spiritual seekers. It's meant to just reach out to anyone out there who just is desiring, you know, change in the world and desiring to live from their hearts. So we have a global network at www.addyourenergy.com. And we also have that on Facebook, facebook.com/addyourenergy. But what we do each month is we run a charity raffle, the Add Your Energy monthly charity raffle. And normally we ask people to donate $5 a month to us. It goes to the Shambhala Center, and we are a nonprofit organization, so the donation is tax deductible. But we ask for a $5 donation. Certainly you could do more if you choose. But for every $5 donation, you get to suggest or nominate a nonprofit for that month. And at the end of the month, we take all of the money and all of the nominations, and we put the nominations in a bowl, and we draw one, and then whoever happens to win gets all of the money for the month that we collected. So it's a very fun thing that we've started doing, you know, in the past few months. This month, it felt very pressing to me that all the money that we take in this month go directly to the typhoon victims in the Philippines. So we actually have, I think, five or six different nonprofits that are actively working in the Philippines right now to bring aid to the victims. And what we're going to do at the end of this month is draw from those so that we know that the money is definitely going to the Philippines. It'll just depend on which one gets drawn. So if you are interested in being part of that monthly drawing this month or ongoing, you can go to our Facebook page, and you will see, I think I usually have it pinned at the top for the month. You'll see a thing where we're asking for the donations, and there's, I think, a PayPal link there where you can go and just do a quick PayPal to us. But yeah, it was beautiful because I sent that out specifically, I think, a week or so ago, and right away I got a response from a woman who... she sent in $100 and she thanked me. She said, thank you so much for taking this on. She said, I really wanted to donate and to help out. She said, but I honestly didn't know kind of how to do it or where to go. So she was grateful that there was, you know, someone like us who were going to take it and make sure it gets where it needs to go so that it will be effective. I think a lot of people are afraid they'll donate and it really won't end up going where they want their money to go. So we're going to take that on. And 100% of your money is going to the thing. So no money is kept by us. And actually, if we get charged by PayPal for the fees, we're picking up the fees so that all the money that you intend to go is going directly to the charity. So yeah, that's one very, very cool thing that we do each month. And we would love more support. We're trying to just, you know, it's like, of course, you're listening to BBS, you already know this, right? So everything is energy. And it's like, I love the concept, you know, wherever two or more are gathered, there's like this exponential increase in the energy behind it, and we're not any different. So this is the point behind this charity raffle. It's a lot of people like to donate money, but here's this concept that we can gather together, get all of our energetics behind this one concept, and put all of that energy into that check that we get to send out every month, you know, that donation we make, and the impact of it, you know, is substantially increased. It's a very beautiful thing. So we would love your support for that. I think that's probably about it for tonight, isn't it? Five till?
Almost. Okay. The other thing I do want everyone to know is that when we have the charity drawing, that's always the first Saturday of the month following the month that the charity was in.
That's right. That's right. That's
so, like, right. November will be, what, December
4th?
I think it's the 7th. December 7th.
The first Saturday is the 7th, yes. And that's when we'll do. And we post those normally within a day to Facebook. I was a little late this month. I haven't gotten the posting out for November, but it'll be there shortly. But yeah, so that's cool. You can follow that on Facebook to stay current with what's going on. But the Create a New World community is very fun. It's global. We've got like 26 different countries right now that are represented there. And so that website, if you go and join, you know, it's free, and it's a way that you can get involved in discussion groups. And we look at everything from like new forms of energy to education to, you know, health and well-being and spirituality, like kind of anything that you'd have an interest in as a human being is presented there. Scads of videos, like just loads and loads of great videos, lots of inspirational stuff, beautiful things. So yeah, we would love to have you join us there. It's a very, very cool group. So.
All right. And we might as well go ahead, plug the Shambhala website and Facebook. Okay.
Yes. And we have revamped the website at www.theshambhalacenter.org and on Facebook at The Shambhala Center. Again, we're very active on Facebook. I post things there all the time. So if you go to the page and like it, I guess that's the key, like it. And then you can kind of get the postings from us on a daily basis there. I think that's about it. Hopefully, maybe starting next week, we'll start taking some callers. We've got to get into the work a little deeper before I can just open up to questions, because you have to have some kind of a basis of understanding what it is that we're doing. But we're getting there. So bear with us, and we are just very, very pleased to be here and are loving our Thursday nights with you. We would love your feedback. Go to BBS and leave your feedback for us, or come to the Shambhala Center site and leave us a comment there to contact us.
And if you guys have any questions, you can definitely shoot us an email.
Yes, questions for Shasada at theshambhalacenter.org. And you send your questions in, and I'd love to get to them when I can. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Everybody have a fantastic week, and we will see you next week.
You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.